So the lesson tonight is going to be a bit unorthodox of a subject matter. We're going to be in 1 Samuel chapter 18. The title of the lesson is going to be The Value of a Dowry. A little interesting study on the subject of what a dowry is and the significance of it. In one of our recent family devotions, as we read about the dowry that King David, before he became king, paid to Saul, we spent some time during that study, during our Bible time, our family devotions, discussing the importance of being prepared for marriage and the wisdom of having a dowry. And in tonight's lesson, I want our church to also look at the subject of the dowry in order to help us to understand the importance of being prepared for marriage, and or to help us to understand the importance of getting our children prepared for marriage. And so I'm going to begin here in 1 Samuel chapter 18, reading beginning in verse 14. It says, "And David behaved himself wisely in all his ways, and the Lord was with him. Wherefore, when Saul saw that he behaved himself very wisely, he was afraid of him. But all Israel and Judah loved David, because he went out and came in before them. And Saul said unto David, Behold my elder daughter, Merab. Her will I give thee to wife, only be thou valiant for me and fight the Lord's battles. For Saul said, Let not mine hand be upon him, but let the hand of the Philistines be upon him. And David said unto Saul, Who am I, and what is my life, or my father's family in Israel, that I should be son-in-law to the king? But it came to pass, when Merab, Saul's daughter, should have been given to David, that she was given unto Adriel, the Meholathite, to wife. And Michal, Saul's daughter, loved David. And they told Saul, and the thing pleased him. And Saul said, I will give him her, that she may be a snare unto him, and that the hand of the Philistines may be against him. Wherefore Saul said to David, Thou shalt this day be my son-in-law and the one of the twain. And Saul commanded his servants, saying, Commune with David secretly, and say, Behold, the king hath delight in thee, and all his servants love thee. Now therefore be the king's son-in-law. And Saul's servants spake those words in the ears of David. And David said, Seemeth it to you but a light thing to be a king's son-in-law, seeing that I am a poor man and lightly esteemed? And the servants of Saul told him, told Saul, saying, On this manner spake David. And Saul said, Thus shall you say to David, The king desireth not any dowry, but 100 foreskins of the Philistines, to be avenged of the king's enemies. But Saul, again, we see there a third time, but Saul thought to make David fall by the hand of the Philistines. And when his servants told David those words, it pleased David well to be the king's son-in-law, and the days were not expired. Wherefore David arose and went, and he and his men, and slew of the Philistines 200 men. And David brought their foreskins, and they gave them in full tally to the king, that he might be the king's son-in-law. And Saul gave him Michal, his daughter, to wife. And Saul saw and knew that the Lord was with David, and that Michal, Saul's daughter, loved him. And Saul was yet the more afraid of David, and Saul became David's enemy continually. And so we see here an example, a use of the concept of the dowry in the Bible. And so in my lesson, I have 7 points regarding the subject of the dowry and the value of children. David here, I want us to first observe, David was expected to give a dowry to King Saul. And in here in chapter 18 of 1 Samuel, we see that Saul told David that for his dowry, or in lieu of a dowry, instead of paying money, or which he couldn't afford, or having something else valuable given to him, that instead he could fight against the uncircumcised Philistines and bring back 100 Philistine foreskins. And that was an interesting conversation when we were talking about that when we were doing our family Bible time. It's also interesting to note here that we also discussed during our family devotion that the Word of God reveals here that Saul had an ulterior motive for requiring such a dowry of his daughter. That even though he spoke kindly and he seemed to be a godly man and the leader of God's people, and yet he had an ulterior, wicked, evil motive to kill David. And so he tried to do to David what David later on did to Uriah the Hittite. It's interesting that we see that here. And so Saul, King Saul, made it appear as though David was fighting to destroy the Lord's enemies, to have fame, to be loved of Israel and of his servants, to become the son-in-law of the king, and to earn the king's daughter, Michal. But Saul actually had the ulterior motive to get David killed in battle with the Philistines, which is not just a method of kings to kill servants that they don't like, but it's also a biblical principle. In Matthew 26:52, our Lord said, "All they that take the sword shall perish with the sword." But what Saul meant for evil, God meant for good in the life of David. And in this lesson, instead of focusing on Saul and David, what I want for us to see instead in this passage is that David and Saul both understood the societal expectation of David to give Saul a dowry for Michal. Although King Saul didn't require money or valuable possessions, he still required a dowry of sorts. And both Saul and David realized that Michal had great value to her father and to her future husband. And so a great price was required for David to have her. In order for David to have Michal as his wife, he was not only happy to pay the 100 Philistine foreskins that Saul asked of him, but he even collected double that, 200. So that brings me to my second point. My second point is to explain what a dowry is. Paying a dowry is a biblical principle. The word dowry simply means price. A dowry could refer to the savings that a young woman brings to a marriage. It perhaps is exemplified by Leah, who considered her good dowry not being financial, since her father gave her nothing but a handmaid, but she considered her sons as her dowry or her value. In Genesis chapter 30, verse 20, "And Leah said, 'God hath endued me with a good dowry. Now will my husband dwell with me, because I have borne him 6 sons.'" She saw her sons as her value, as her dowry, as her investment in life, and her bargaining chip with her husband, which we won't get into today. Today in our society, young women typically don't have much of a dowry or financial value to bring into the marriage. However, she should have some savings, especially if she has godly parents with the means to help her to save for her marriage. And if she has been a productive member of her family and has been a financial benefit to her parents, she should have some savings. When we were married, Sherry and I, Sherry had a van already that was paid off, as well as some other savings, which, although we never needed to use that savings, I, as her husband, greatly appreciated it. And we hope that we'll be able to pass it on to our children one day. As opposed, though, to the woman's dowry or savings, the dowry most often referred to in the Bible was usually a payment that a young man made to the father of the young woman that he wanted to marry. And that's the dowry that we're going to be looking at today. We see that dowry in Exodus 22. You can turn there if you like, Exodus 22, starting verse 16. We're only going to read verses 16 and 17, but we see here the principle of the dowry being explained. It says, "And if a man entice a maid that is not betrothed and lie with her, he shall surely endow her to be his wife," to pay the dowry in order to be his wife. "If her father utterly refuse to give her unto him, he shall pay money according to the dowry of virgins." He still had to pay the dowry, whether or not the father required him to marry her. And here we see the phrase, "endow her to be his wife," that refers to paying a dowry in order to have her as his wife. And I want us to understand here that the principle of the dowry is older than Exodus 22. It's older than the Mosaic law. Jacob exemplified it by working for 7 years for each of his two wives, Rachel and Leah, in Genesis chapter 29. We also see it exemplified by Shechem, the Hivite, who offered a dowry to Jacob to marry Dinah after taking her. It's an interesting subject discussion to know whether or not she was raped or forced or did it consensually. But that Hivite there offered a dowry to Jacob to marry her in Genesis 34. Then I want us to understand that dowries are also confirmed by and enforced in the Mosaic law, like we saw in Exodus 22, verses 16 through 17. And so we should have this understanding of the importance of the principle of a dowry when we see that the dowry was demanded by God in the Mosaic law for the Israelites. Every young man who was going to get married was commanded by God to pay a dowry of virgins, or what some call a bride price, to marry a woman in Israel. So now that we established what that dowry was, I want to take my next 5 points, my final 5 points, to make observations about the importance of a dowry, the benefit of a dowry, of God's use of the dowry in the Mosaic law. A dowry, my third point, is that a dowry implies the need for early financial preparation for marriage. It is important to understand the need for early financial preparation for marriage. And by the way, this lesson, I got my kids in mind the whole time I was preparing this lesson to help them to be prepared for marriage, to be godly husbands and wives. And this is a lot. This plays a lot into having that. And so dowries require and imply an investment and savings. The requirement for a dowry required a man to be prepared to provide for his wife, and more so. We parents should be helping our preteens even, and our early teens, to be thinking about and to be getting ready for proper courtship and proper marriage. They should already understand what courtship is, moral purity, what moral purity is, and how to prepare for marriage, to be discussing these things with our children. It's a foolish practice for parents to not teach their children anything about morality or about marriage or about how to properly prepare for marriage until they magically become adults at the age of 18. That's foolishness. If a young woman is properly raised, if she loves the Lord, and if she's faithful to God and to her father, she has immense value to both her father now and to her future husband. Proverbs 31, verses 10 through 12, talking about the Proverbs 31 woman that every one of our daughters should be aiming to be, and that every one of our wives should already be. He says here in verse 10 of Proverbs 31, Who can find a virtuous woman? For her price is far above rubies. She's priceless. She has immense value to her father and to her future husband. The heart of her husband doth safely trust in her, so that he shall have no need of spoil. She will do him good and not evil all the days of her life. So a dowry prevents a man, by principle, the need for a dowry prevented a man from marrying a young woman without being able to afford her. It prevents the young man from following his heart and from seeking to have a relationship when he has nothing to give her but love. Right? How often do we hear that? And that's foolishness for a relationship to be begun under such circumstances. Whether or not that man has a dowry, no man should be courting until he's financially, emotionally, and spiritually ready to get married, to be able to support a wife and children. It is no small task. And it's not something to be done flippantly. No man should follow the wicked method of dating. Dating is doomed for failure. But instead, he should be learning about the wisdom of courtship. No young man or young woman should even consider also taking birth control pills as an option. It shouldn't even be an option in the mind of a Christian to take birth control pills, since they cause countless abortions. And they could ruin that wife's future fertility. Also, no man should be thinking about courting a young woman unless he's prepared and capable of providing for both her and her soon-to-follow children. He should be ready to provide for them. A young woman should be seeking to obey the biblical exhortation in Titus 2:5 to be a keeper at home. To follow the biblical example of a productive, Proverbs 31, keeper at home. And be prepared to have children soon after marriage. That should be a part of the package. That's expected. That's the command, to go into the world and be productive. And so wise parents will teach their daughters on a regular basis to not consider marrying a man if he isn't clearly capable of providing for her and their soon-to-follow children. And they will also, if they are wise, those parents will teach their children what courtship is and how to be a godly keeper at home for their daughter. Today, the vast majority of those who call themselves Christians have such a carnal and worldly mentality regarding relationships because they don't love and read God's word to understand the principles that I'm referring to. And because our society's conditioning to date instead of court, for young women to be independent career women, for young men and young women to hold off marriage until they're older, or for married couples to hold off having children after they get married. And for children to be perceived as a financial burden and a killjoy to their relationship. That is part of the conditioning of our society. Brings me to my fourth point, is that a dowry prevents promiscuity. A dowry prevented promiscuity. This is a great place to provide another warning about the importance of hedging ourselves against falling for the doctrine of Balaam, for us not to fall for the doctrine of Balaam, for which this entire world was destroyed by a flood, for which there were countless biblical warnings and biblical examples of the consequences of falling for the doctrine of Balaam, and for which many Christians today are compromised, and they're hindered from serving the Lord since they have become unequally yoked. 2 Corinthians chapter 6, verses 14 through 15, but be ye not unequally yoked together with unbelievers. That's pretty much the doctrine of Balaam in summary there, of becoming unequally yoked with unbelievers. For what fellowship hath righteousness with unrighteousness? And what communion hath light with darkness? And what concord hath Christ with Belial? Or what part hath he that believeth with an infidel? And so there with a warning to not be unequally yoked. A dowry can prevent that, though. It's a good note here that there would be a lot less premarital sex if all the young men had the common societal understanding, as they did under the Mosaic Covenant, that if they had premarital sex, they would be required to pay a dowry of virgins to the young woman's father. Whether or not they got married, whether or not that young woman got pregnant, and they would be forced by law to marry the young woman if the woman's father required it. That would prevent a lot of premarital promiscuity. The requirement of a dowry would also prevent a young man from being in the wrong place at the wrong time. We see this also exemplified in Deuteronomy 22, verses 28 through 29. If a man find a damsel that is a virgin, which is not betrothed, and lay hold on her and lie with her, and they be found, then the man that lay with her shall give unto the daughter's father 50 shekels of silver. That's the dowry. That's commanded in the Mosaic law that a young man provides to the father. And she shall be his wife, because he hath humbled her, and he may not put her away all his days. And so, although it's very difficult to know for sure, in my study of the concept, it seems that this 50 shekel dowry mentioned here comes to about 6 months of standard manual labor work, or about $15,000 in today's economy. 6 months of work that should be paid in a dowry to the woman's father. The civil requirement of a dowry would incentivize young men to make sure that they never place themselves in a morally compromising situation, that they never be alone with any woman, and that they always have witnesses, so that they could easily prove their own innocence and not be falsely accused of owing the bride price, the dowry of virgins, to the woman's father. And so a dowry prevents promiscuity. My fifth point, a dowry illustrates the value of children. It illustrates the value of children. Yes, children add difficulty to life. Especially initially, when you have multiple children that you have to change diapers for and have to carry at times. And it can be difficult in the beginning of having of that marriage. And they do cost a lot of money. That must be admitted. However, there is great wisdom. There is great joy. And there are invaluable blessings behind God's command to procreate and to have a godly marriage. Having children is more effective than paying a life insurance policy. Children are an investment that pays off with compounded interest, if the parents biblically and wisely raise their children, that is. And there are many elderly people today, I've seen many, even ones who claim to be Christians, who have no one to turn to at their old age because they foolishly refused to have a godly home with children. They didn't want children. They didn't want that burden. Just like the many who are alone today with no support because they foolishly and rebelliously refused to obey God's command to have a godly church home. You got the family home and the church home, that if neglected, a person will be alone and without help. By principle, as the parents took care of and provided for their children when they were young, the children should take care of and provide for their parents when they're old. It should be reciprocated. Young men and young women should not only be respectful and obedient to their parents while they're under their father's coverture, this very important principle of coverture, they should also be productive while they're there. They should be supporting their parents and their family, even as younger kids, even as preteens and teens. They should be supporting and helping their family. They should be productive. They should have great value already, not just because they're your children, but because they're helpful. They should be contributing significantly to their parents and to their household, especially as they get older. It's expected to be a great loss after parents have poured their lives into teaching and training and counseling and protecting those children. And then when they're the most valuable to those parents, they leave and get married. And it is expected to be a great loss. However, although it is a great loss for that father to lose his daughter, if that new suitor pays a dowry, it would help to offset that father's loss of his daughter. And the newly married couple should be planning on taking care of their parents, which also makes it worth the loss of that father of his daughter to that man, that young man. Brings me to my sixth point. My sixth point is that a dowry implies a simultaneous leaving and cleaving. A simultaneous leaving and cleaving, as exemplified also in Genesis 2, verse 24. We see that principle of young adults leaving their parents and getting married at approximately the same time. Genesis 2:24. Therefore shall a man leave his father and mother and shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh. That happens at one time, at one approximate time. A young man should be saving while he's living at home under his father's coverture. And then when he gets married, he should have a smooth transition to managing his own household. He goes from one household to the next, and so should it be for the young woman, going from one household to the next. One structure of a family to the other structure of a family. And where he, that young man, is now responsible for providing for his own wife and children. And he should be able to purchase and get a mortgage on a house. He should be able to pay for his transportation to and from work, if not also providing a vehicle for his wife, so that she's not stuck at home without a means to take the kids perhaps to a doctor or to the hospital for an emergency, whatever the case may be. He should also have no debt or be on the fast track to paying off whatever debt he has very soon. He should also have some kind of emergency savings for complications and for the upcoming expenses for his wife's pregnancy and for childbirth. It is expensive to have a child, the whole process, and so it's important to be prepared for that. In order to save up for these planned and for these unplanned expenses, it's implied in Exodus 22, verses 16 through 17, that young woman is supposed to be living with her parents, under the coverture of her father, until that dowry is paid and until she's married. That's the point. At that point that he pays that dowry and then marries that woman is when she leaves the father and cleaves to the husband. The biblical concept of coverture, as well as patriarchy, is illustrated in Numbers chapter 30, but we're not going to have time today to delve into that topic. According to Numbers chapter 30, the young woman should not only leave her father's, should not only have her father's blessing to get married, she should still be living with her father, submissive to him, and she should have him involved in her courtship, as well as having her parents involved in all of her life decisions. That's a part of the package of being a family, of having being under her father's coverture, explained in Numbers chapter 30. And so even though she is no longer a young child, she should still be submissive to her father's will, because she's still under his responsibility and under his protection until she marries her husband. That brings me to my last point. My last point is that the biblical dowry is a forgotten biblical concept. How often do we hear anything about a dowry? It is a forgotten biblical concept. Today, it's almost impossible to find anyone who has any idea of the concept of coverture, or of courtship, or of a dowry. And it's also difficult today to find young prospects who have godly parents that understand their responsibility in coverture and who assist in courtship. Many young people today, they think, how am I even going to accomplish that with ungodly parents? Nonetheless, we all need to do the best that we can to implement these principles. It doesn't matter what our backgrounds are, what our baggage has been, and what our situations currently are. A large part of this worldly mentality toward biblical relationships and marriage is partly due to the vast majority of those who call themselves Christians having a lackadaisical approach to God's word. They don't understand these concepts because they don't read God's word to understand them. And it's due to the influence of our society's onslaught against the patriarchy, against monogamy, against moral purity, so that they could pursue their own wicked imaginations without hindrance and without conviction. However, every one of us should be preparing our preteens. We should be preparing our young teens to have a biblical work ethic, to understand how money works, to understand how the economy works, to start saving now, and for us to start helping them to save. Maybe even to start saving on their behalf. And we have methods that we've implemented in our home on the subject. We must also, as Christians today, resist the foolish and detrimental mentality of our society that all our children need to do is to make good grades. That then, they after they've done nothing but schooling through high school, they spend another 4 or 8 years after they've completed high school to keep doing nothing but school and racking up debt. I'm not saying that if you do go to college that you are racking up debt or that it's necessarily wrong, but a child should not be expected to do nothing but school. He should be productive in the family and helping to provide for himself and for his parents. We must also resist the foolish and self-destructive method of dating. I cannot say that enough. We must not fall into the trap of dating. Today, I personally, regarding the subject of the dowry, today I personally would not require a young man to have a dowry set aside to give me in order to satisfy my loss of my daughters. And I'll tell you, my daughters, even Hannah, is very valuable to us. She is a great help to our family. And other than a dowry, though, there are many more ideal qualifications that I'd like for a young man to meet before he marries one of my daughters, like being a virgin, right? I'd like for him to be a virgin. I'd like for him to have godly parents. I'd like for him to have no debt. And I'd like for him to have no mRNA gene-altering jab that could cause hereditary complications. I'd like to have those things, but unfortunately, it's difficult to require those things. Almost nobody would fit that bill. It's hard enough today just to find a suitor or a young woman who fears and loves God and who faithfully attends and prioritizes their church. It's hard enough just to find that. And so although I wouldn't require a dowry, here's what I would want. Here's what I would look for in a suitor for my daughters. I would want to make sure that any suitor for my daughters love and fear God. I would advise my daughters not to consider a young man if he doesn't love and fear God, if he is not clearly born again. I would also want for him to be wise. Wise. Not just biblically wise, but also wise in the ways of being able to provide for his family. I would want him to be hardworking. I would look for a suitor that's hardworking. I look for a suitor that's capable of providing for and protecting my daughter. That he doesn't just have the means to, but the desire and care to. I would also look for him to treat his parents with love and respect. He might not have parents. He might have divorced parents. He might not even know who his parents are. But he should have adults that he's been raised by or has a relationship with that he loves and respects and has a good relationship with, to prove that he will have a good relationship with us and with my daughter. And above all else, I'm looking for a husband for my daughters that will have proven himself to be faithful to the Lord and to the church. That's what to look for in a suitor. Although he might not have a dowry, we should be looking for a suitor that has those things. So in closing, we've seen here the biblical concept of a dowry. We've seen God's wisdom in requiring a dowry in the Mosaic Law. It wasn't just a command, an arbitrary command. There was a lot of wisdom behind having a dowry. And we've seen the benefits of its principles. And we saw that some of those benefits are that a dowry implies the need for financial preparation for marriage. We saw that a dowry prevents promiscuity. We saw that a dowry illustrates the value of raising godly children. And we saw that a dowry implies simultaneous leaving and cleaving. And then we saw that although a dowry is forgotten, a forgotten biblical concept today, it's still a wise and biblical practice. And wise young adults should try to have a dowry themselves. We should try to have a dowry provide to the parents of those whom we marry. And that was the lesson tonight. An interesting topic, something rather uncommon. Pastor, anything to add? Any comments?